it's a big community.
Good morning. The August 24th meeting of the Cambria Community Healthcare District Board of Directors is hereby called to order. Let's do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have all five board members present, plus we have Mike McDonough, our administrator, present. We have Tim Bennis present, who is our operations manager, and we have Simone Rathbone here. She is our administrative assistant, and Chief Putney has just arrived. Good morning. So we actually have an audience member. So do you have any public comment for items not on the agenda? No. All right. Then we're going to dive right in to the approval of the minutes from the July 1st special board meeting and the July 27th regular board meeting. I would entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we have unanimous approval. So now going into the operations report by Tim.
Has everybody had a chance to review the report? And does anybody have any questions? There is one error that Bill's pointed out that I'm going to do some research on. Is there any other questions?
Well, why don't you point out what that is?
So on the run report, on page one of the district activity report, it shows a total of 50 transports. If you add up the transports to the facilities, it equals 49. So there's a difference of one, and we're going to try and figure out where that difference is. So I'm not sure. I have to go back and research and see if it actually might have been two patients transported to one facility, which might have been what happened.
Okay.
And then for the month-to-date stats so far, we've had 39 transports this month alone with 180 citizens. We've had a total of 3 Monterey County calls. There's a third one that's occurring right now at the quarter.
Okay. Any question?
Yeah, I just have one about the one of our employees has tested positive.
Yes.
And was the individual symptomatic?
Yes, but they weren't at work.
Oh, they weren't at work. Okay,
yeah, it's not a work-related exposure.
Okay, never came to work with symptoms.
Never came to work with symptoms, no.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the administrator's report. Mike?
I hope you've had a chance to review my report. Overall, the things are fairly well described there as far as our status with COVID. We did have a good turnout at the vaccination in our office last week. We had 13 individuals receive the vaccination. They're in San Simeon today.
Mike, you need to speak up.
Oh, sorry. So they're in San Simeon today for the second round. We will be
doing that again. They think in about every 3 weeks or so they will cycle back through to take care of those needs. The financial reports.
Well, by the way, before you move on,
sorry.
I want to alert everybody, including the public, that CVS and Walgreens now has the third dose available. And for example, I made an appointment for my wife to get her third dose today, and that's her medical appointment. But it's,
yeah.
causing me to have to leave by 11 today.
The reports I'm getting from the our public health department is that the third dose is for a limited population of people with compromised immune systems and certain things like that. There is a lot of discussion in the media, as you may have, I'm sure you've seen, about a third booster shot for everyone. The county is anticipating probably we're looking at the end of September before that rolls out. So it's appears to be coming, but that universal booster is not quite yet available for everybody.
Mike, for the clinic that you've been running and will be running, looking at the flyer, there was a $25 gift certificate.
There's a $25 gift card that the county is providing as long as supplies last.
Okay, you've answered the question. You have the word county.
Yeah, the county provides. Actually, they're providing everything other than we're just providing support of facility and a little bit of manpower. We had our ambulance crew attend the waiting area as people wait the 30 minutes after the shot in case there's any reaction. So essentially, it's not. There's no cost involved for us at this point, which is nice. So on to financial, the ambulance service was almost right at budget, just a hair under. We're still getting some sluggish payments from Medicare. It's improving slightly, thanks to Simone's diligence. Tax revenue in July was less. I just completed the updated tax charge with the county assessor, and we should be getting some catch-up payments either the end of August or in September.
But this payment included the teeter payment?
I believe we received part of the teeter, is what it looks like. It's a little hard to calculate with them, but... our contract services was above budget. We had audit fees that came in July, and then we had extra services we had asked Sherrington to do. Fleet fuel is over budget. The cost of fuel has gone up, as you know. We had some minor miscellaneous expenses. Let's see. Monterey, we did get $6,000 in July for the Monterey calls, which was appreciated. However, there were no Monterey calls in July, so we may see a slight lag in payment because we had a dry month. Although this month is making up for it, it's just going to come later. Our rental income was under budget because we got actually two payments, as I noted last time, in June. They paid for July in June. So, other than that,
what about the PERS payment? Why is that?
Yeah, PERS. Yeah, PERS has really been a bugaboo. I'm trying to get a handle on how they calculate. We get, six different bills a month?
At least.
From PERS. And it defies sense. So I'm trying to get in with PERS to find out why and what, if anything, we can do about this to make it more predictable. They're going through some changes right now. They're changing the way they calculate things, and they're changing our unfunded liability calculations. All of that is in flux, and I've been trying to wrap my hands around that, and I will continue to do so. But it is it makes it difficult to predict what those costs are going to be, because it's hard to get a pretty clear answer from them.
What's important from my standpoint and the whole board's standpoint is whether we under budgeted PERS for the year.
That's what I believe.
That's not such a concern.
Yeah, I'm concerned it may be under budgeted, but I need to find out. Is this just a spike or is this a trend? And I don't have an answer right now, to be honest with you. But I'm looking to try to figure that out.
Any questions for Mike?
I have a question on the progress metrics. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a lot of them, but I'm going to just stick to one, which relates to quality metrics and reporting to the board. I think that the progress report that's being given doesn't speak. I mean, let me just ask the question.
success in this metrics for me means that the metrics we agreed to are being regularly reported to the board, and I'm just wondering where we are with that.
That's a good point. I agree it needs work. I need to have a clear and consistent reporting tool for these metrics.
Well, we haven't had any reports.
Well, right. And also I recall that you shared with us a set of reporting metrics and indicated that all of these were metrics that were easy for you to report on. So I'm wondering what's the obstacle?
Just time. I just need to sit down and do that.
I see.
It's just a matter of...
How about starting reporting and things?
Yeah, I can make that a priority item for next month. Absolutely, and I should. It's just been a lot of things
going on. Stop reporting on all these others.
Yeah, that's...
We're into the new fiscal year.
Making a note.
Any other questions for Mike? Okay, moving on to committee reports. I approached the Cookie Crock, as I believe I reported last month, for a donation. And they said they would give us a donation. However, I followed up with Jessica Clay, and she has not answered my calls. So I have lost confidence that we in fact will get a donation, but not completely. Maybe that what they'll do is they'll simply issue 34 gift cards, you know, for all our employees, operational employees. So we'll see. Beyond that, Bill just told me he spoke with one of the people that has promised a donation to our trust. And that's Richard Lee at Lee Family Trust. And he said that he has directed his people to issue a check to us for $2,500. So we should be on the lookout for that. I forget what the limit is, that I can just take a photo of the check and deposit it that way. I think it might be $5,000, but I'm not sure. So, anyway, let me know when it shows up. I don't have anything else to report. Property and facilities / facility project ad hoc. Lori?
I'm happy to report that we successfully launched the RFP for the ambulance station, our administrative office pre-design work, on August 5th. On August 14th, we had four firms do a walkthrough of the facility, and tomorrow is the deadline for proposal submission, and I believe we'll have somewhere between 3 to 5 proposals to evaluate. And so we'll be able to report back to you at the next board meeting what the selection committee will meet and determine the top-ranked firm. We'll go into negotiations and hopefully be able to report who's been selected at the next board meeting and have for board approval. We also received our environmental hazard study was completed, and not surprisingly, there are concerns that there's asbestos, lead paint, some mercury, and some PVCs.
And that's part of that report.
Yeah,
it's in the board packet.
It's in the board packet, but that was done just so that as we move forward, looking at how to deal with the facility issues, that we're well aware of what kind of mitigation might be needed in order to do any renovation or rebuild.
Okay.
So that's where we're at with that.
Any questions for Lori?
Just a comment. I once again just want to say what an outstanding job I think Lori has done on this. It's just a tremendous amount of work. The quality of the RFP was just over the top. So
sure,
I know that was not a small amount of work. So.
No, that
very appreciated.
Oh, thank
you. We actually had an additional community member volunteer his services, Don Sather.
Yes.
Who is a retired professional architect.
Yes. And he will be part of the selection committee. So we're very grateful to have him join us. Yeah.
Okay. Healthcare advocacy and outreach.
Well, I'm happy to report that we met. It's been a very, very long time. What we did at the meeting was that this was a bit of catch-up for us because we had deferred to the COVID initiative for quite some time. So what we did was that we reviewed the mission, and then we went through. Lori was able to provide some continuity by sharing with us a lot of the previous activities that had been undertaken at the district with regard to community outreach and wellness. Since that time, we have been able to relaunch one of them, and that was because Diane just got right on the ball. And so you'll see, in fact, I saw right outside our office this big giant banner.
Yeah, that there's one down at
the Cookie Craft.
Main Street and Windsor.
Yeah, yeah. So the fall prevention program has been scheduled, and boom, it just happened just like that. And I know that Tim will speak later to the Explorer program. It's an odd thing to bring up publicly, but I have reached out to Bryn about the concert, and I may need some help because she's not responding to my emails, and that's all I have to her for her. So maybe I may be going into her spam, but we would like to see if that's possible.
I think if you call her, I think her number's available on her website.
I think I have a number for her.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
I'll follow up later with them.
It's just that she has gotten, when she made the offer to us, she wasn't doing much.
And now she
is. Now all of a sudden she's swamped with requests.
And I would understand she just may not have gotten my email, though, so I want to make sure that we've contacted her.
But anyway, I'm sure she's interested and we would, I think, the community would benefit from having a health fair that involved her.
Absolutely.
And then also, what about the Heimlich maneuver? Are we ready to try to do something on that?
Yes, I'm working on that. With the Soccer League, they have their own curriculum, so that to be able to do it and link it to them, you have to do an online course, which I've looked into and I'm getting set up so I can do the online course to be an official instructor, and then that actually links us into their loop, so we'll be able to be considered an instructor so people can come to us and learn it and stuff like that. So I want to make sure that we dot all our T's, cross all our T's and dot all our I's when we do this. And it's the cost, there's no cost for the class to the district or anything. It's just me taking the class and then me doing it online. So
for the Heimlich and Stop the Bleed, you're talking about people coming to us. I thought we were going to go.
No, we're going to go to them, but what will happen is they'll also put us down as one of the proprietors on their website, so we get free publicity and stuff like that. And it shows that we've been trained on how to do it.
Okay. Finance. Bill Rice.
We have not had a meeting, but we probably in the next month or so will have a meeting once we get some firmer costs out of the Property and Facilities Committee. We may have the right dollars, but on the wrong budget line. And once we get a feel for what the consultant's fee will be, we can come back with a recommendation to move some dollars from one line to another.
Okay. Grants, Lori.
We have not met, but I would like to say that it would be helpful to the Grants Committee to get some direction from both strategic planning and the foundation on possible. There are some possibilities, but it would be nice to determine from either the foundation standpoint or strategic planning what our priorities are, so that if we're going out after some grant monies, we can go after our top priority, such as an ambulance or. And such. So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Do we have any grants out there that we haven't heard back from?
Yes, Bill, that's a good question. The assistance to firefighters grants, we submitted two requests, one for power cut and loading system, and then also for an ambulance, and we haven't heard back yet, but Mike has heard that they're actually starting to make awards now, and they trickle out. So we'll see what happens. We should know in the next month or two. They should also be announcing another notice of funding opportunity. They say September last year they said September, and it was actually January, so we'll see what happens.
How should we provide this input to the grants committee? You want it from strategic planning, or how?
Well,
how do you expect it?
In some way, yeah.
I mean, we could sit here and
we could. I mean, I think our number one priority right now is an ambulance. I mean, we have requested funds through FEMA, through the AFG, but that's very competitive, highly competitive, and so the question is whether or not we should proceed with going after the potential for asking for a gift donation to our foundation in order to support the purchase of an ambulance, or to go towards, have a directed donation for
that. Does anybody have any objection to that? Does it interfere if we have dual requests out?
No, because we actually have two ambulances that could be replaced in the near future,
right.
I think. Correct, Tim?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, why don't we give you direction that way?
Thank you.
Does the public want to comment on that? No.
No.
All right.
All right. Okay,
why don't you just take that as direction? And because I think with regards to facilities, you're going to be approaching that from a different angle.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Strategic planning. Cecilia.
So the strategic planning committee is the whole board. And I wanted to suggest, I don't know if it's now or at the end of the meeting, but I think that while typically you have a longer horizon for strategic plans than annual, I do think it's appropriate to do an annual review to make sure that the strategic plan is updated in the event that it does. So I didn't know if you thought that the strategic planning committee, which is the board, should have an isolated meeting for that, or if you thought it was better that we set aside time at a board meeting to do that.
Any thoughts?
I've seen other boards in similar situations will conduct a workshop, a strategic planning workshop, and it follows a slightly different path than the Brown Act. In other words, it's kind of like a special board meeting where all the board members can be there at one time, and as well as other people that you invite, and you can run it that way if you so.
Well, I think I'd be in favor of a standalone workshop, and then it can be interactive.
Okay, I'll work with Mike then to see
set up a date for that. Okay, great. Thank you. Trust fund marketing ad hoc. I don't know which one of you, Bill or Cecilia, because I think you're joint chairs on this.
We have not had a meeting, but it's on our agenda to get together.
Okay. All right. Then moving on to regular business, employee recognition program proposal. Lori, or Loria, as the...
Is that what I wrote?
No, you didn't write. I missed it, sorry. Anyway, Lori Miller and Tim Bennis.
So as we discussed at last month's board meeting, the district would like to recognize not only the employees but their families for not only their service but the time that they spend away from their families and how much... we appreciate their efforts. Tim and I have conferred, and we would like to propose an event that would be held during the day at Camp Ocean Pines, and it would involve a barbecue-type meal that Camp Ocean Pines would provide at a cost of $18 per person, so much less than the $29 per person. And it would give us use of their amphitheater for our recognition ceremony, as well as a large a smaller lodge. It's not the large lodge at Camp Ocean Pines. They have a smaller one with a very nice outdoor deck area, so we could be outside, well-spaced, and just provide the families an opportunity to enjoy Camp Ocean Pines and let the kids run around and be crazy. And Tim's going to, he wants to offer them s'mores and have a big bonfire, but we'll visit that some more.
Some more?
Some more. That was unintentional. I apologize. So, I don't know. Tim, did you want to add anything?
No. I think that this would be well received by the crews and something that would be a good morale booster for the crews.
And it'd be on a weekend?
Yeah.
Because you're talking about having kids there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
These are families.
Yes. I believe it was a weekend day of the weekend, wasn't it? The
yeah, and Camp Ocean Pines has Saturday, October 2nd available.
Yeah.
Okay. Any public comment? Hearing none. Does the board have anything they want to ask Lori about or Tim about? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to approve this.
So moved.
Bill Rice.
Second.
Cecilia. I think we can dispense with roll call vote. We'll just say, does anybody have any objection to recognizing our employees for the great work that they've done? Hearing none, the motion is passed by acclamation.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on then to why Chief Putney has arrived. Explorer program proposal, and that's Cecilia as director and Tim Bennis, operations manager.
And I turn it over to Tim.
So this is
here. Why don't we pass this down to Tim so it can be recorded properly?
So this proposal is to implement an Explorer program with the CCHD. What an Explorer program does is it allows young youths between the ages of 14 and 21 a chance to get immersed in a certain type of field. They would come, they would do ride-alongs, they would learn training and do stuff with the crews. The Boy Scouts offers insurance that helps cover any liability for them. And our crews, we would have to express some time, they would have to spend some time training, which is kind of a benefit for our crews, because instead of them just sitting around doing nothing, they actually have to take the time to work with a youth and explain what we do, how we do it, and things like that. And then hopefully get the youth interested in what our field of practice is. We already know because of the pandemic and just in general, there's a shortage of healthcare workers, there's a shortage of firefighters, a shortage of law enforcement, stuff like that. This gives the kids an opportunity to learn and experience it and not learn that we don't do what you see on TV, which is kind of interesting. I was an Explorer advisor with San Luis Ambulance, and two of my Explorers went on to become Eagle Scouts, and three of them have gone on to careers in nursing, and one of them is on his way to becoming a police officer. So it's really fun and exciting for us because it pulls us out of our shell and makes us go over equipment. You know, we'll go over stair chairs and backboards and gurneys and medications and stuff like that. So it makes the crew have to practice and teach, which then refreshes them on their memory, on their skills. It's a very minimal cost to the district. We would have to purchase uniforms for the crew Explorers. They would be completely different. There are certain guidelines that are set in place by the Boy Scouts that we'll have to adhere to. They can't stay past certain hours. It has to be two adults with this child at all times. And there's a myriad of other ones. Every Explorer advisor has to complete an online training course that's offered through the Boy Scouts. He teaches them all the rules, regulations, what to do, what not to do, stuff like that. And I think Chief Putney can explain a lot better than I can some of that stuff and some of the other stuff.
Okay, why don't we take the mic back here?
I want to make a quick comment. I've been heavily involved with this program in the past. I was an Explorer for some wife in Santa Maria. It's an amazing program. Served my paramedics and doctors. It's a high standard program. There's high expectations for these young people, and they usually rise to it. And I fully endorse this program.
So I'm Bob Putney. I am the council commissioner for the Los Padres Council of Scouts BSA. We cover both Santa Barbara County and San Luis Obispo County. The Scouts BSA has a long history of having youth involved in different activities, mostly mainstream Cub Scouting, Boy Scouts, venturing, things like that. Our longest running program that involved both young men and women is Sea Scouts. And in about the 50s or 60s, we started exploring, realizing that youth in schools need to see what a career may look like so that they can get some experience. So even though, as Tim referred to us, it's Boy Scouts of America, actually Boy Scouts of America has a separate group that's under Boy Scouts called Learning for Life, and that's what the Exploring is under. It's under the Learning for Life program. So I could drone on about it. I will just tell you that I've been involved in about 20 different Exploring groups in the last 40 years that I've been a volunteer in Boy Scouts of America. There are a lot of young men and women, even in this county today, that came out of Exploring or Scouting, where they were maybe a Boy Scout or a Cub Scout, and as they got older, they moved into Exploring and looked at different careers. As Tim knows, and many of you know, people start a career path in college. They go down the path, they start the job, and they hate it, and they go to something else. This gives youth a chance at an early age to go, do I really want to do this? A lot of people I talked to said, I would love to be a nurse or a doctor or an emergency, a medical paramedic or whatever. And they get out in the field and see a blood or somebody screaming or somebody trapped in a car, and they go, I'm out, can't do it. So this gives them an opportunity to look at that. So with that, I would, you know, like I say, I could drone on. It's a wonderful program. The Learning for Life program through Boy Scouts of America offers general liability insurance and individual accident and sickness insurance, basically that would indemnify the district. It requires a minimal amount of people to start the program. You would need basically four adult leaders. Even though the Boy Scouts in the 50s and 60s, which you probably heard about in the news, has had a sordid history with youth protection issues, we're coming out of that now, out of that bankruptcy, and we now have what several large organizations that deal with championship for protection of youth. We have the most stellar youth protection program in the world, and Boy Scouts of America has offered that free to other organizations. There's no charge for them to do that. So as part of the Learning for Life program, all of the leaders who have direct contact with the youth will have to take youth protection training, and that's required to be renewed annually. And that's all done online. There's no cost for that. So with that, I'll stop talking and answer any questions you may have.
How many explorers do we expect to participate?
I would say a good number, between 4 to 6. Realistically.
And you talked about we have to buy the uniform?
Yes.
And what would be the basic cost of that?
It would be the pants, which are around $40, and the shirts are around $15. And in the past, I know when I was a police explorer, we actually had to purchase our own uniforms, and the department would assist with COG. If the explorer couldn't afford it, then the department would help pay for their uniforms. But it's also a good incentive for the child to make sure that that's what they want to do. The parents make a commitment, the child makes a commitment to do it. So it might be something that we explore. The uniforms would be completely different than our uniforms, so that they're obviously defined as an explorer. They don't get roped into being like a paramedic or an EAT or anything like that. The uniform's completely different.
But if you're talking about 6 individuals and uniforms running $55, so you're talking well less than $500.
Yes. Okay. And we have a bunch of extra uniform stuff still from past employees that have left. So I've been doing all of our new hires and stuff like that. I try to outfit them with uniforms that we have, and we can continue that process depending on the size amount. We might not have to purchase. Shirts would have to be purchased because, like I said, they're going to be a completely different color than what we currently have. But Lions makes a relatively inexpensive shirt that's, I think, $15 to $17 for a shirt.
Okay. Any other questions for Bob? Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
I don't think at this point, I suppose we could simply say we agree to move forward. So I guess I would entertain a motion to move forward with this program.
So moved.
So Bill Rice moves.
Second.
Lori second. And again, I don't think we need to take a roll call vote. Does any board member object to doing this? Hearing no objection, it's voted in by acclamation. Okay, now we move to agenda item E3, and you want to bring Josh in on this? While you're doing that, what...
And who is Josh?
Oh, he's the stand-in for Jeff Minnery.
Okay. Jeff is off right now, and Josh was standing in. We talked with him a while back. He's another attorney, Jeff's.
Yeah, he's a counsel that steps in for Jeff when Jeff is unavailable for doing his district council duties. I guess what we should do is pass this over to Mike. The mic to Mike.
The basic project element, well, I guess Bill summarized the proposal from NDC is what, $21,000?
Double check.
My other speaker box is non-functional at the moment, so we'll
have... This is Josh.
Hi, Josh. This is Mike McDonough. We are at the CCHD board meeting, and you are on speakerphone. Let me move this around to the central location.
I think we can hear this fine.
It might be better off, because the further away it is.
Okay. I'll make sure it's turned up all the way. Yeah, it's up all the way.
All right, Mike, you want to turn it off and tell us about what you need to be doing as a board with regards to redistricting?
All right.
Mike, I can hear you, but I hear somebody talking in the background and I can't really hear what you're saying.
That was...
Sorry. Josh, I was just asking Mike to outline what it is the board needs to be doing with regards to redistricting.
Got it. Mike, do you want to start on that and have me jump in, or do you want me to go first?
Why don't you go ahead and bring them up to speed as to the current situation with the redistricting, the CVRA. I did attend a recent CCSD meeting where that was their first public meeting on the topic. I think Cecilia was in on that too, so that kind of sparked this.
Has the CCSD taken any action to move towards districts?
They've engaged the services of NDC,
and the demographer,
and they've had their first public meeting.
And public hearing. Additional.
Right.
Okay.
So they're on the path. They're on the path to doing it.
And correct me if I'm wrong here. Our board has indicated their intent to take a look at that, but we have not yet engaged a demographer or taken any steps down the road. Is that correct?
The only thing we've done is the board passed a resolution a while back. Other than that, no, we have not engaged the demographer. But I did receive a quote from NDC this morning, which I can send you. Board members have copies in front of them right now, hard copies.
Okay. So where we're at, just pulling back here, the CVRA has been a sort of a big hammer over the head of cities and districts and other agencies in California for quite some time. There's a group of plaintiff's attorneys that have been going around filing cases. And what happens if somebody makes a demand, you have a safe harbor provision, and during that safe harbor time, you can say, "Yes, we're going to go towards districts." And if you follow the deadlines and get that done, then there's a limited demand that you can get. I believe it's $20,000 is the fees that they get for having set that demand. We're obviously a step ahead of that because the district has already indicated their intent to head in that direction. There's a potential for a significant sea change in the law with regard to redistricting, and that's the City of Santa Monica case. Without going into all the details of that case, although I'd be happy to give you more detail to anyone who wants, the city lost at the trial court level, appealed, and won their initial appeal, and now it's potentially going up to the California Supreme Court. This was significant because there's only been a couple other cases that have been tried, and they had ended up with disastrous attorney fee awards against the districts or the cities. And also, if a district or a city elects to go towards a district, they get to go through the process and choose their own districts. As supported by the work of the demographer, if you go through a trial, the court will then determine what the districts are. Excuse me one second. That's been something that's been up in the air, and I know that we have been watching that litigation with great interest, as have been other agencies that have not gone forward. That said, even if that goes through and is upheld, the basis for ruling in favor of the city in that case was the statistics and information that was produced by the demographer. In other words, in order to win that case, what they did was they looked at the makeup of their population and essentially said, there are no districts that could be drawn that would suit to increase the voting impact of certain minorities, and in fact, by staying at large, you have the ability for those groups of people to concentrate votes and actually have more representation. In fact, and there was significant representation of those minorities on that city council down in Santa Monica. So that where that leads me to is my recommendation would be that it would make sense to go ahead and go forward and retain a demographer to take a look at the makeup of the boundaries of the district and the populations inside there to determine who's there, where they are, if going to districts would be something that would actually, well, first of all, if there is any dilution of voting of certain groups or minorities, if there is, if going to districts is something that could help resolve that, and then if that's the case, then it would be time to maybe look at going forward and creating those districts. Once that information comes back, the members of the board change their mind and say, look, we don't think this will actually serve any good to go to redistricting, then depending on the outcome of the Santa Monica case, there would actually potentially be a basis to defend that action, having done that work in the past. So that essentially where it falls for me is my recommendation would be, especially with somebody already in the area working for the SD, it may be a good time to go ahead and retain perhaps the same firm and have them go ahead and do that work for our district as well, and then give us the information to make further analysis.
Okay, I have a question with regards to hiring the same firm. This is AD Fedorov. Coast Unified School District basically has the same geography that the health district has.
Okay.
I don't understand why we would need to do a separate study if we're covering the same or effectively the same footprint, because I think they cover up to Ragged Point, mm-hmm. up to the Monterey County line. They cover down to at least to Harmony, if not further. Do they include Cayucas?
Yeah.
Ah, so they actually include a larger footprint than ours.
Yeah.
But maybe in consultation with CUSD, we could maybe manage to get a more favorable set of prices.
Yeah, that's a great point. And is the school district, have they already gone through the process of going to district elections? Do you know?
No, they're in the process, but this demographer's report was presented at the first public meeting on this.
Okay.
Well, no. Did you go to the CUSD
meeting or CCSD meeting?
Oh, CU. I'm sorry. I'm talking about the school district.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about the school district, too.
I've
you went to that
meeting. Yes.
Okay.
And a comprehensive report of the demographer. And, you know, the other thing that, Josh, I want to note is that the we have a copy of the original January proposal to the school district. And we were charged for base project elements $5,500. And for the exact same scope of work, they want to charge us $16,500 when the work is already done. I don't understand. It's just
that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I think it would make sense for Mike and perhaps with assistance from our firm, if you want to talk to a few different, if that's the case, to try to reach out to these different firms and see what we can do on the price of that. I agree with you. It doesn't make sense that the same scope of work would be more expensive. I would guess it's a supply and demand thing with different cities and districts that are already have already gone to district elections that are concerned about compliance with laws regarding the new updated census data, although there's a pending bill that would push that off until April. As of right now, for people who are already have gone to district elections, they have a November deadline to update their districts. So it could simply be how busy the demographers are right now. But I would recommend using a demographer that's already working in the area that's done some work if it's going to impact the price. If it's not going to, I would definitely recommend seeing who's out there and what the different charges may be.
Okay, well, I think we need to invite the demographer in and have a conversation with him.
So, this one?
Yeah, this one.
Yeah.
And so Cecilia and Mike meet with that demographer and say, look, why are you wanting to charge us so much when it appears that you charge the district?
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if it's negotiable.
Yeah, there's certainly nothing. All they can say is no if you ask the question, right?
Sure.
I have a couple of questions. This is Bill Wright.
Yes.
What is your best guess of when there will be a final decision on the Santa Monica case?
Oh, it could take a year.
Okay.
So in other words, we can't any longer wait for that.
Only if the Supreme Court, you know, rejects review of the appellate court, then it could be done sooner. But if they pick it up, which I think it's likely that they would, it could take quite a while. And either way, I guess what my advice is, either way, even if that law is upheld, we still need to have the information about the makeup of our district and determine what impact going to district elections could potentially have, because we're not going to end up with an opinion that says you're not ever required to go to districts. What we could end up with is an opinion that says in these circumstances, not only are you not required to go to districts, but it would actually be harmful to go to districts. And without having the work done about the makeup of the residents of our district, we're not in a position to know what that is.
Okay. I have another question of timing, and this is working backwards. Okay, we have an election next November of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have to backing up at some point. There's probably a deadline to notify the county that we're going to districts. Do we have any feel for what that date is?
I do not know, but I can certainly find out and communicate with Mike and let you all know.
Let us say it's June 1st. We would have to have everything done way before that.
Sure.
Through all the analysis, all the public hearings, have us come to a decision that that's what we want to do so that we can get back to the county by June 1st, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree with that analysis.
What does the April 17th date that has been offered up have to do with?
Are you talking about with regard to SB 594?
I guess, yeah.
So, as of right now, until, unless 594 becomes law, agencies that have already gone to district elections have a November 1st, 2021 deadline to update their districts based on the updated census data. Because that has been delayed, that is pushed back to April 17th, 2022. Because we have not gone to district elections right now, those deadlines are not impacting what we have to do.
Okay.
So, in other words, what when you have the districts are drawn up based on the composition of the occupants of each district, right? And those, you know, say you went to districts last year, you were doing it based on almost 10-year-old census data. So we had the census, and we will have updated census data. So we are then required, if you have gone to districts, you are required to go do that analysis of the districts to see if there's any change in composition of the occupants of the districts that would essentially defeat the purpose of the original district lines that were drawn. We are still currently in at-large election, and so that's just based on whoever lives inside our district can vote, right, at large. So there's nothing for us to adjust until we go to district elections. And at this point, going to district elections, we would only want to do that based on the updated census data. So even going to the elections for the first time, they would be based on the current data, which would mean those boundaries are then still good for until the next census comes out in 10 years.
Okay. Any more questions from any board members about this?
Do we have any feel for how much CCSD paid for their study?
No, I reached out to them, and I did not get a reply yet, but I will keep trying.
All right. I think, what action do we need to take today?
I think it would be recommended, if this is the consensus of the board, that there be direction to Mike to explore the possibilities of who's out there for a demographer, what those costs would be, and see if, you know, any of the costs that don't seem to make sense to us are negotiable, and then perhaps bring something back at the next board meeting for potential approval.
Okay. Would anybody like to make a motion to that effect?
I don't think actually a motion is required. It's more of a discussion item, and that's generally the consensus of the board. And because Mike would not be engaging anybody on behalf of the district without subsequent board approval, I don't think a vote is required, nor do I think that a vote has been agendized. So it's just simply more of a general feedback whether he should head that direction or not.
Okay. Does anybody have anything to add?
I would just recommend that we start with the call with
NDC.
Those questions should be answered.
Okay, so Cecilia and Mike,
yep.
We'll just invite NDC, if they're in the area, to come have a discussion.
I will follow up with him.
All right.
I've been dealing with the president of the company. He's the one that does the voting.
So then, moving on then to agenda item E4, which is the umbrella draft district COVID-19 vaccination policy. As you may recall, I believe it was at our special board meeting August 3rd that we passed implemented the standard operating procedure applicable to personnel of the district. And this umbrella policy, which is a one-pager, is what will go in our policy manual. And that is the be the enabler for requiring directors to be vaccinated. And then it then flows down to the standard operating procedure that applies to other than directors. Does anybody have any suggested changes to this?
Not necessarily a suggested change, and I think that it seems fine. I don't seem to have a strange question about, particularly in the umbrella policy, if that is the very vehicle that we're trying to be inclusive of directors. I don't understand what the enforcement mechanism is. So with our employees, we say it's a condition of employment.
Right.
I don't think you can say that about directors.
Josh, are you still
You're
there?
Correct, I believe.
I am.
Did you hear my question? Because I was speaking to Iggy.
Yes, I did. So the district could enact a policy covering directors, and I think that's probably a recommended thing to do. Having said that, I do not believe that the district would be able to take any specific enforcement action or remove a director because they are an elected official based on a failure to comply with the policy.
I think the word employment is the differentiation here.
This sentence at the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm fine.
All right. Then I would entertain a motion to approve this policy manual edition as written.
So moved.
Casey City moves.
Second.
Bill Rice seconds. And let's do it the same way. Does any director object to its implementation? Hearing none, then it is unanimously approved. And at this point, we are adjourning the open session, and we are going into closed session. If there is any reportable action out of closed session, we will report that. I would entertain, before we adjourn to closed session, any items for the agenda for the September meeting for a review of what we've already talked about.
I apologize for interrupting, but are you all done with me, or do you want me to stay on?
We're all, yes, thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. Nice talking to everyone.
Uh-huh.
All right, so for next month, we will be talking about the
proposal selection for
approval. And then we will be talking about the demographer. Results of discussion and way forward. And then I think we've already approved the Eagle Scout program. We've approved the employee recognition program.
Did you? The reporting quality.
Report on quality metrics. Anything else?
I have one item. Just yesterday, started getting into this with Jennifer from our legal counsel and Josh. We discovered, just as we go through all this stuff, long story short, that there is a missing piece in our documents, a conflict of interest code resolution. We are not able to locate that was ever passed by the board in the past histories. And it's a piece that Josh recommends that we do, and they're drafting some language for me, and I can bring that to the board at the next board meeting.
Okay.
What is it?
It's basically, in a nutshell, just identifies or defines what our... We have a code of a conflict of interest policy. This resolution kind of dovetails it. And the policy says, see attachment A. We don't have the attachment A. It's a missing piece. So,
is that for the employees or for the board?
Well, I believe it's board and employees. Ties in with our conflict of interest policy.
So I had asked the question because for the selection committee, we do have two community members who may have had interactions with these firms that are submitting proposals, and just want to make sure we have a conflict of interest.
Right. So we kind of checked into that, and we found we're pretty good, except we're missing this little piece. So it's an easy thing to resolve, And like I said, they're drafting language for me, and I'll bring it to you next month.
Okay. Any other items?
I don't think so.
All right. So, meeting is adjourned at 10:02 a.m., and we're going to adjourn to closed session, so the recorder should be turned off.
Make sure I hit the right button here.
For the time being...